Shalom and welcome to Tehillim Yomi. Today we learn Mizmor Yud Bet, Psalm 12. Psalm 12, in a word, is about words. Our greatest medium of expression is indeed King David's most precious vehicle for connecting to his Creator and to his people. However, there's a grave danger that surrounds the use, or rather abuse, of words. With words, I can write poetry, create laws, and build civilizations. And with words, I can lie, cheat, hurt, and even kill. Words represent the bridge between our inner thoughts and our ability to exchange with the world around us. Psalm 12 represents a significant change in David's attitude in his Psalms as an enclosed unit devoted almost entirely to one topic, words. It does not have to do with David's suffering or his despair, nor is there a plea for salvation in general. He has only one thing on his mind. L'manatzeach l'shminit mizmor l'David, Hoshea Adonai ki gamar chasid, ki pasu emonim mibnei Adam. God will save, for honesty, integrity is gone. Trustworthiness has been stripped from man. Shav yidabru ish et re'eu, sfat chalakot belev v'lev yidabru. Lies and deceit, people speak to each other. A language of smoothness, superficial communication. Yachreit Adonai kol siftei chalakot, lashon medaberet gdolot. God will obliterate all who smooth talk, those who speak with high, falutin language. Asher amru lil shonenu nagbir svatenu itanu, mi adon lanu. God will obliterate those who brazenly state, our words will strengthen us. We're our own masters. Who will be master over us? Mishod ani me'an katev yonim ata akum yamar Adonai. Ashit b'yesha yafiach lo. They who prey on the downtrodden, who embezzle from the simple, I shall arise, says God, wage war against those who breathe out erring air. Imrot Adonai amarot tehorot, kesef tsaruf ba'alil la'aretz mizukak shivatayim. God's words are pure as molten silver, glowing from the furnace. Ata Adonai tishmerem titzrenu min ador zula olam. You, God, alone will guard the downtrodden, watch over this generation. Saviv v'sha'im yitalachu, krum zulut livnei Adam. When the downtrodden will rise up, the evil ones will walk in circles, unable to find their way. As we've seen in previous psalms, our sages have approached this psalm in different ways, and they interpret it differently. Each one with his own angle on what exactly the message and the context of the psalm was about. Rashi, who remains true to tradition, maintains that the psalm was written by King David, and they're about him and his history and his story. If the topic of the psalm revolves around dishonesty, deceit, and chicanery, then there is room for us to witness that in King David's life, that took place. As David was running away from King Saul's spear, he experienced an eerie alliance from the people living in the wilderness of Ziph. They accepted him and offered him peace at the same time using their other hearts. They went to Saul and betrayed David's hideout, waiting for a reward for David's ultimate demise. It was not the people of Ziph who were killing David. They merely spoke words to Saul, informing on David and causing near tragic ending to David's life. Against them, David speaks out. Where are the honest and wholehearted people in this world? Why must I encounter smooth talkers who speak with one heart but hear to another? Let God strike down those who talk with such haughtiness. Rashi finds historical background to trace the motivation for David's psalm, but Radak accepts the premise that the psalm discusses those individuals who deceive and ill-treat the weak and impoverished. But he argues that the psalm is not about David and his generation, but rather, he says, this psalm was said with the Ruach HaKodesh for a future generation, in which an evil populace will abuse and overpower the feeble. Radak does not accept that this story is about David. Radak does not accept that it is even about his generation, but that it's some kind of future prophecy. Why does he reject Rashi's historical approach? Didn't he find enough historical basis in the psalm? Wasn't David's life characterized as one of the aspects was that he was tormented by these smooth talkers and swindlers? But Radak noticed that there's an interesting aspect to the psalm which is very un-David-like. The poet never turns to God and asks him for something. And we're used to David's formula of, there's an enemy over me, I'm in trouble, God, please bring me redemption, justify the innocence, plead for salvation. In this psalm, there's really no turning to God. In fact, in the first section, in verse 4, the poet refers to God in the third person. God will destroy. And in verse 6, he refers to God in quotations. This is how God will, God will say. The final time the psalmist turns to God is more of a statement of fact. You will guard them, God. Perhaps Radak concludes that if there's no direct request to God, the psalm must not be referring to David's current situation. Instead, it must be something about a time far away, at a time when everyone is involved in double talk and deceit. A third perspective is offered by Malbim. He introduces the element that the double talk is directed against God as well. The key phrase that he brings as proof is in verses 4 or 5. Asher amru lil shonenu nagbir svatenu itanu miadon lanu. Those who speak with big words, who say our words will strengthen us, who will be our master. Malbim writes, those who speak towards God in matters of faith, their language marks intense religious feelings, but they philosophize over it and ultimately reject it. For Malbim, perhaps more important than the deleterious effect the abuse of words has on one's fellow man is the extremely detrimental effect it has on the religious beliefs of individuals. Throughout history, there's been sophists, casuists, sectarians, and the like who have used power of words to persuade the populace to veer away from God, or to engage in hedonism or any other type of ism. Either due to succumbing to one's desires or to succumbing to one's intellectual justification, the outcome is the same, a gradual slide into a theological abyss. The anti-spiritual climax is reached in verse 5 when the enlightened individual says, "Who will be master over us?" After the person disproves divine providence and calls everything happenstance or the whims of nature, he concludes that the one who controls nature is the true master. Those with the power to convince the masses against believing and warp the minds of the populace cannot afford to think about such lofty issues as faith in God. According to Malbim, our psalm, the issue is that those individuals with the power of words can influence people to stray away from God, but only God and his Torah can repel this arrogant attitude. God, whose word is pure, whose Torah is truth, will protect the innocent and guard against the evil of the generation. God will not shy away from the inquisitors of the generation, but will defend and lead and protect the rights of the downtrodden forever. We focused on three explanations of the psalm, all legitimate, all seeing a different perspective in the words of the poet. Each one presents us with a unique approach towards studying the Bible. Rashi underscores the historical aspect, how David fought external and internal foes, and always relied on his creator as a source of energy to continue. Radak focuses on the biblical words as prophecy with a message for each generation, while Malbim reminds us that the words we use against others can often act as the spear we thrust towards the heavens in hope of controlling our own destiny and answering to no one. Once again, the words of the Torah, the words of God, is the only repellent to the heartless and superficial jargon heard in our community. The key verse is 7, Imrot Adonai Amarot Tehorot, Kesef Tzaruf Ba'lil Eretz Mizukak Shivatayim. The words of God are pure, unadulterated, absolute truth. Those who have faith in God will be rewarded by his word. Those who abuse the words and ultimately cast them to the heavens in deceit will bear the brunt of God's wrath. Shalom.